And welcome to Argue the Toss from GameIndustry.com. I'm Shella.
And I'm Drew, and together we're arguing about the things that really matter in games.
Indeed we are.
Yep.
And first of all, I suppose we should say Happy Thanksgiving to all our listeners.
Yeah, or if you celebrate Thanksgiving wherever you are, Happy Thanksgiving.
Exactly. Yeah, I suppose there might be some people that jump on. I need more turkey in my life.
Yeah.
So today's not very festive topic is...
Yeah, it's not very festive, and it's, again, not very game-related. We're talking about TV things again. We're talking about some new shows we've been watching and an old show which we've watched. So we're going to start by talking about Stranger Things, and then I'm going to talk a bit about Westworld, and you're going to talk a bit about...
Man in the High Castle.
Cool.
Yeah, so we're straddling all sorts of streaming services.
Yeah. There. You'll need plenty of subscriptions to keep up with this episode.
Yeah. So I'm going to kick off with Stranger Things.
Yeah, and I think before we start, we should just mention that this, at least in the case of Stranger Things, I think we are going to go into spoilers pretty much from the off here.
Yeah.
It's about two or 3 months old now, isn't it? So I think
at least.
I think we're past the window.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd say so. So yeah, this episode kind of came up because I was really enjoying it when it started and you weren't.
Yeah.
And then we kind of came to a point at the end. So we were like, okay, let's definitely discuss it because I want to hear what you've got to say because I was really enjoying it and you were just like, oh God, I just can't believe. So
God, is that what I sound like? Yeah, this is, we were talking about how this is, given the name of the podcast, this is one of the first sort of things that we really sort of diametrically disagreed on.
Yeah.
It's taken us a while to get around to it.
Yeah, I mean, so I guess we'll kick off with the positive side, which is kind of where most people are coming from. I mean, it's got like 95% or something on, you know, I don't know, Rotten Tomatoes or whatever it is. And
right.
9 out of 10 on IMDb.
Okay, I'm wrong, I admit it, fine.
So it's universally loved.
Okay.
And I really loved it. I'm a child of the 80s, so I'm going to come right out and say I love the nostalgia of it. You know, it's a sort of real golden period in cinema. I think it's sort of like bridges. It was kind of the birth of the blockbuster with things like Jaws and E.T. and everything, which kind of then created a monster, which is the sort of cinematic world we live in now, where, you know, there's like loads of merch for everything and, you know, McDonald's is dragged into stuff and, you know, all that sort of thing. But this was sort of an innocence about it still then. And, you know, there are beautiful films, those Spielberg films that it's riffing off. And, you know, there's John Hughes in there. There's all sorts of things. And that was part of the fun, was kind of catching the references, which I understand you kind of, that was part of the thing that you didn't like, that it was so heavily referential. And I can see that I can sort of empathize with that viewpoint as well. But for me, as a child of those times, I really enjoyed it. And yeah, just kids on bikes solving mysteries again. You know, we don't really get that these days. I think those kind of films that much. So
no,
I really enjoyed that aspect
true.
Of it. And seeing Winona Ryder back. And in a role that she's always wanted, you know, sort of older, haggard, weary, as opposed to the wide-eyed ingenue that she still hasn't really aged into because she just seems to be, I don't know, preserved. She must have, you know, a Dorian Gray portrait in the attic because she just does not age at all. So she probably could still play the ingenue. So yeah, I really liked that she obviously relished that role. It was great to see her back because she's a great actress. Yeah, and I thought it was a really nice cast. There were loads of things I liked about it. So that's my first impressions as it was starting out. And yours?
Well, yeah, I mean, sort of you touched on it. It's the sort of referenciness of it that... It's not that it didn't appeal to me, and it's not that I don't like references to that stuff, because even though I'm not a child of the 80s, I've seen all that stuff. A lot of that stuff is some of my favourite stuff, like The Goon, one of my favourite films. I've read a bunch of Stephen King things that were... I've seen It, which was the sort of TV film adaptation of It, which I think have sort of... Not heavily, but... quite heavily Stranger Things, and that's kind of like
and
I
Stand
like
by
that.
Me, another
Yeah,
Stephen
exactly.
King.
All of that stuff. I'm sort of familiar with the the general sort of stuff that was coming out back. And like to the same sort of extent, I think that the Duffer Brothers are the guys who created the show, because it struck me as funny that this is a very 80s heavy show, and they were born in like 1984, so they were, you know, six when this stuff was coming out at the older, and I was born around that time as well, so I think we're on sort of pretty similar levels as far as the way we approach this stuff, because you know, this was stuff I was watching in the 90s as well. But I'll be honest, I'm kind of not a big fan of reference as a main driving force behind Purdue. Stranger Things is obviously very, very much based on reference. Go through a list of things that came out. Probably every entry you came to, you think, oh, this is what they've taken. This is what they've taken from this. But there's nothing really that interesting to me underneath Stranger Things to back it up. The monster itself isn't really all that interesting. It doesn't have a particularly interesting way of existence. It kind of just attacked. I also don't feel like any of the characters had much of a story arc to that. There was no real character development. Eleven gets a sort of very brief one where she kind of has a fight with boys halfway through, resolved by about the next ebb. But it's not really filled out that much. And just in general, there was nothing about the story underneath itself that hooked. It's all the shell of references. It's all decoration and no scaffolding underneath. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I do know what you mean. I like the boys and their relationships, and then Elle turns up, and you know, there's the cute sort of blossoming love, sort of relationship between her and Mike. Referencing those kinds of films again, again, you know, that sort of the sort of blossoming sort of bridge from childhood to sort of teenagehood and all that sort of thing that those films like to deal with, and then the way that there's a shift and an eventual rift in the friendship dynamic of the group. I quite liked that. And, you know, Lucas as the sort of antagonist within the group there and sort of goes out on his own. And then the sister, I liked her story as well. Nancy, the girl who kind of wants to go out with the popular guy. And, you know, so that's the John Hughes film within this. And Barb, who became her best friend, you know, her best friend who became fan favorite. People were like putting up, I think there was like a sort of memorial to Barb, like popped up and stuff like this, because I thought she was a really great character.
I was kind of disappointed that she just gets next two episodes into the series. I thought that was a real wasted opportunity.
Yeah, me too, because she was really great.
Yeah.
And had a backbone and, you know, had her own motivations as opposed to just the ones that were necessary for the story.
Yeah.
Just to serve the beat. Yeah, so I really liked the police chief, sheriff guy, sort of grizzled, gruff, heart of gold type character. You know, there were lots of nice characters in there, but I do agree, nobody really had a journey. Even though one of them got kidnapped by a monster and, you know, and then one of them kind of blew up or disappeared or something, and, you know, he came back and coughed up a slug at the end, but then just sort of like wiped his mouth on his sleeve and went out to have Christmas dinner or Thanksgiving dinner or whatever it was.
I like the idea of that, but it really just did feel like a scene thrown in to tease season two rather than something that had been earned by the previous story.
Yeah, it was. I mean, because all the way through, I was like, yeah, I really like this. I don't know what Drew's talking about. You're obviously just, a bit more keyed in, I guess, and could see the emptiness of it before. But it was the characters that kind of kept me there because I really liked them. And then it got to the last episode and I was just like, well, that was a nothing.
Yeah.
It was so unsatisfying. That I can't believe people are excited about a season two. Because I don't know if I'll watch a season two. It's like, well, if you can't actually deliver anything at the end of this one, and I mean, you could say, oh, but it's a cliffhanger. It's like, yeah, but you have to answer some questions or give me, you have to reward me for sticking it through your story.
Yeah, just as a general rule, I'm not a fan of any series or film or any sort of media which produces, you know, a first series with the intent of, okay, we're going to do this in our second. Because it seems to me awfully presumptuous that people are going to like your first series enough to carry on.
Exactly. And it just is kind of lazy storytelling.
Yeah, absolutely.
So because they heavily signpost, you know, everything's not quite right and, you know, and therefore season two. But the characters don't. The characters are completely unaware, apart from Will, who coughs up the slug. So, therefore, they don't feel like people by the end.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. That, I mean, that was one of the sort of main problems that I had with the series, apart from the stories. I felt that the characters were all, you know, while they were sort of charming and likable initially, that that's kind of it. The first, what you see is what you get with them. The first scene in each character's sort of individual, I think arc is overplaying it, it is what you get for the rest of the series. That's all you, like Steve when he first shows up. What's her sister, her boyfriend,
Nancy,
that's it. He is like a jerk at the beginning, really sort of, you know, jockey. You know, he's only interested in sex and himself. Never really changes. There's the one scene where he kind of switches over to their side because they're in the middle of a fight. But that's it. That's the end of his thing.
Yeah, and it's the same with Lucas. Lucas probably has the biggest arc, but it's the same. So he goes out on his own and he goes against Elle and, you know, doesn't trust her and whatnot. And he finds out some stuff and then they have a fight and they hug or whatever. I can't remember what it is. And he's pretty much back to the exact same person he was before.
Yeah. That's fine. Like, you do kind of have to return to, you know, the character you were before, just at the end of any sort of arc. That's the reason that it's an arc to go up and then you come back down. But there's no sense of underlying change there. It's not different having learned something. He's not the same, but having learned something, he's just the same.
I mean, not all characters do have to have an arc.
No, I know.
All stories have to have character arcs. But they've taken, I think the problem is the fact that it's an homage. So they've, you know, it's an homage to all these things and they've included all the mistakes that these referential materials make. You know, that they're just kind of they're archetypes, or, you know, the high school jock who, you know, who doesn't really learn anything, and the girl who wants to be the popular girl, whatever, Nancy, who then strikes up a friendship with the oddball guy, but she goes back to the douchebag kind of abusive, possessive guy at the end. You know, there's nothing contemporary about it. It was all, even the sort of gender politics.
The thing is, I don't think that, you said, you know, it's the same mistake that, you know, the 80s stuff was making. I'm not necessarily sure I agree that 80s stuff was making that mistake. Because, I mean, I think for Stranger Things, like, the two most major influences that I can see are Stephen King novel, sort of supernatural aspect of it all, and John Hughes film, which is the
Steven Spielberg.
And Steven Spielberg, yeah, sort of in the
like
visual
hugely.
I'd
say more than John Hughes.
All right, fair enough. Yeah, I'm homing in on a sort of specific.
In terms of character
but
development.
Even with Steven Spielberg, that like I've always sort of thought of all of that stuff as being really good at doing character arcs, like Stephen King. Particularly, I mean, it is all about the development and changing of characters over a whole lifetime, which is which I always felt was done really, really well. Steven Spielberg does the same thing with Jaws and E.T. and not so much.
E.T., because that's what it's riffing off a lot, and E.T. doesn't really have a character arc.
No, I suppose not.
Change, considering he's just met an alien, been sort of abducted by government agents and then helped the alien escape. He doesn't really change.
That's not the only thing it's referencing. There's also John Hughes, which is, you know, fantastic at that. I mean, that's the reason John Hughes exists, is to do
rite of passage stuff.
I think it doesn't really learn the lessons of its source material well.
Well, yeah, I mean, because it's, but it does take carry some of the mistakes of those
Yeah,
films as well,
I
i.e., you
suppose
know,
so.
the fact that it's a boys' club, it's there's a token girl, she doesn't really do anything apart from she's got a cool power, and she gets to kiss a boy, and then she's blinked out of existence at the end.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I think you know we agree on this point. I think I was defending some of the 80s stuff rather than defending Stranger Things. Yeah, absolutely. It would have been nice to see that updated and made more modern. And yeah, that was something that it didn't well. And that's the scaffolding underneath that I feel is missing, you know?
I do agree. Yeah, so by the end, because we disagreed as I was watching it, and then I got to the end and I was just like, oh, okay, that was a bit disappointing. It was that, but especially that final scene where they're all swapping Christmas presents, and I was just like, hold on a second. I was like, how many years has gone past? Have they all been to therapy? And everybody seems so fine about everything.
It would have been nice to have like just a scene at one of those Christmas dinners where Winona Ryder turns to whoever it is who's sitting with her and goes, "You think we should move? You think we should go somewhere else?"
So, yeah, it was a shame, really. I hope they find a way to bring Barb back.
I didn't they find her pretty much beyond the point of being
I
brought back?
know. I can't believe that. What a mistake. I bet they're gutted now that they know that everybody loves her so much. I wouldn't be surprised if they do a David Lynch and just bring her back in some capacity. They might as well riff off Twin Peaks as well.
I was surprised if they did if they moved that
No.
on.
So, do you recommend it at all to people, or?
To be honest, no, I don't. Like, although so many people have seen it and enjoyed it that it's difficult not to rec. Apparently everybody loves it. But personally, it's not one of my favorite shows. I would say I was really kind of disappointed with it because I went into it really sort of looking what it was selling, and it just didn't come out with that.
Yeah, see, I didn't. I remember that Winona Ryder was doing a thing where she was a harassed mother, and it was set in the 80s. And I think I was reading an interview with Winona Ryder or something, and I was like, oh, that could be cool.
She
And then
kind
I
of.
never heard anything more about it, so it wasn't really built up in my head in any way. And then I went to London, and my brother, I was saying at my brother's, and he texted me, and he's like, oh, get on my Netflix and watch Strange Things. And yeah, so I kind of binged it whilst I was there.
Yeah, I was kind of disappointed with her character in general, especially during the sort of first half of the series, where she seemed pathologically unable to explain herself to anyone. So she does this thing where she string like she hears Will on the phone and the lights flicker. So what she does is she strings the whole house up with Christmas light, and like it's either her son or the police guy who comes to her house and says, "Okay, what are you doing?" And the normal thing that someone would do is say, "Okay, I have this weird theory, and I know this is strange, but bear with me. I'm just going to keep these up for a little while, and then I'll take them down if it doesn't end." But what she does is sort of kind of jump up and down and point at the wall and speak in half sentences. She's like, "Will, I saw Will, and it's the phone," and yeah, it just really frustrated me. I'm like, just sit down and
Speak.
calmly explain what you're doing. It is, it does sound insane, but if you just go through it from the beginning, people will be like, "Okay, just keep these up. When it doesn't work, take them down." But she just does not sort of. She kind of sells the idea that she's a crazy person more than the idea that she's having does.
I don't know. Yeah, I kind of forgave that because she's kind of a highly strung person, and they're real outsiders, aren't they? And so people think they're the kind of crazy weirdo family. So I kind of just put it down to that.
Yeah,
But
just
yeah, I know what you
frustrated me as
mean.
I was
But
watching it.
there are lots of things like that where the narrative, the characters are forced down certain paths because it serves the narrative as opposed to serves them as people. But
There were a couple of weird moments like that. We've talked about this for quite a while now, so I won't come off this soon. But the science teacher, like the science teacher, I really liked as a character. He's really charming, really funny whenever he shows up. But he's only there to sort of explain to the boys how to move between parallel universes.
Mm.
And that just sounds so weird to me. Like, he's a science teacher, and he should have been like, okay, well, theoretically you could do this. But instead of being like, okay, you know, in theory you could do this, he's like, oh yeah, this is how you in parallel universes. You know, you just kind of twist reality so that you're on the other side of this fishing line thing. And they're like, oh, okay, that's what we need to do. We'll go and do that.
We'll go get the stuff that he said.
I forgave that more than I forgave anything else, because I just like the idea of a cheery, sort of kind of credulous guy who's just like, you can.
Yeah, sure, boy. Go ahead. I just like that you're interested in science. But I would recommend it. I think I liked it more than you did.
Yeah, I think that's true.
It's beautifully shot. It really is. Mm-hmm. I mean, as an homage, they do it incredibly well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the beautiful Spielberg lighting, and I agree that it is, be prepared for quite a shallow, hollow experience.
That's exactly what I think. I wouldn't not recommend it. I would recommend it to anyone who wants to sort of sit there and kind of bathe a nostalgia.
Yeah.
But anyone who's looking for something like more cerebral, something more kind of HBO or, you know, television, I don't think it's that well as a series in that context.
No, it's just a bit of fun.
Yeah. Okay. And I hate.
So on to Westworld.
Yeah,
fun or not?
Okay.
The cerebral, unfun, heavy, gritty.
Okay, well, I mean, it's got for those things. It is cerebral and it is fun.
I'll just say I haven't seen Westworld. So for people who haven't seen Westworld yet,
Drew
is going to be kind to us and not spoiler.
Yeah,
because I really want to see it.
Yeah, okay, absolutely. I'm not going to spoil anything because I haven't sort of seen it. I'm not up to date.
Mm-hmm.
There's stuff I haven't as well, but I'll keep as light on major plot as I can. So, do you know the basic premise of it?
Yeah.
All right. I mean, I'll explain it for listeners anyway.
There's a Simpsons episode.
Oh, is there?
Yeah, where they go to the
Itchy and Scratchy Land. Westworld? Because I haven't seen the original films. I've seen that episode, but I never knew that was what it was referencing.
Oh, my God.
I'm going to have to go back and watch that. Oh, fair enough. So the show is set in this kind of expansive Wild West theme park staffed by extremely lifelike, intelligent bots. They're real humans in the Old West, and their bodies and memories are repaired and reset periodically for new the park. So there's kind of a Groundhog Day element to it as well, which isn't really sort of the main focus series, but that's the sort of general premise come into it. And what I like about it is, like, well, you know, kind of a lot of things. This show hits a lot of my butt because it's, all right, so it's Wild West, it's mm-hmm. science fiction, it's role-playing, turn up to the part, they want to play it cowboy.
Mm-hmm.
It's, and so it game design stuff and the stuff about storytelling, and underlying all that are the themes like the existential Blade Runner theme, which deal with life, what is consciousness, what is sentience, mm-hmm. do androids dream of electric sheep, that, you know, that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of that, there is an underlying mystery that sort of very much reminds me of like the early seasons of Lost, where they were sort of looking for the hatch, and you know, there was stuff which we didn't know what was going on, but it hinted that there was this great conspiracy. Yeah, when it was good, yeah, precise. but it feels more like this show knows where it's going. It doesn't feel like it's saying, oh, there's a hatch, and we know what's in it, and it makes sense, whereas Lost sort of, you know, put the hatch there and did.
And then tried to figure out what it was.
Yeah, like they came up with whatever it was at the start of season two, rather than having.
Yeah.
I'm just really enjoying it. It's got
It got a great cast?
Apart from
Anthony Hopkins, which is just amazing. I mean, when did he ever do TV?
Yeah, precisely. I mean, this is the sort of this is what HBO has done now. They've television appealing to film. So Anthony Hopkins is in it. Ed Harris is in it. He's fantastic. The guy who played Cyclops in the X-Men is in it. Thandie Newton.
Really?
There's just a really fantastic cast. And yet what it hits me is that, like, this is the same thing we were talking about last time, was we talked about Red Dead Revolver and Red Dead Redemption, and I can lose myself in that sort of Wild West sort of thing, and it's also kind of engaging my brain a bit. There's a lot of philosophy, and one of the main complaints I've seen about this the show is that it's kind of a slow burn. It's hour-long episodes. No, exactly. It's a world that I'm happy to burn slowly through. Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I'm just really enjoying it. There are things I don't like about it as well. There are a lot of things put in which are seemingly just to titillate a particular demographic, i.e.
Yeah, I've heard men. That.
Like, so it I was talking about this with someone on Twitter, that it shows a pair of breasts before it in female character, which I think should be like, can we add that Bechdel test just so...
Body parts before.
Yeah, exactly. And this stuff is more early on, but it definitely is geared towards the first through few episodes. There's a scene in the very first episode, camera through like this array of robots deactivated, so they're all standing and they're all naked, and somehow it manages to show full frontal female nudity in that shot and yet avoid showing even a man's ass.
Have you seen the Kevin Bacon appeal to Hollywood to release the bacon?
No, I haven't.
It's hilarious. I can imagine. Google it on YouTube. It's amazing.
I will.
It's about the sort of gender disparity in news.
And I mean, to be fair to the show, later on it does show full frontal male nudity, reference to that, but not as often as there is female.
No.
I mean, there's also in the first episode, again, I'm not spoiling anything plot detailed here, but there's an out of nowhere lesbian kiss really early on, which again, like, feels like it's just there to titillate it. Six episodes in, that character's sexuality has not come up again or been remotely relevant to anything she does. I mean, you know me, I'm a staunch supporter of being more inclusive of, you know, LGBT stuff. But this just doesn't feel like it's done for that reason. It feels like it's done to sort of perk up the teenage boys who have lost interest.
Like, we know it's a bit serious, so here's some lesbians who may or may not be actual lesbians.
There's this one thing which keeps taking me out of the experience, and it's not a bad thing. You know, there are some actors who are associated most strongly with, like, strange comic that it's difficult to see serious. I don't know if you've ever watched It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
No.
Okay, this is going to...
Is that set in an Irish bar?
It is, yeah, at Paddy's Pub.
Oh, I think I've seen an episode then, yeah.
Yeah, there's a recurring character on that show called... recurring character is called the McPoyle. And they are the most... Their gimmick is that they're the most disgusting, weird family. They're always sweating. They're always drinking lukewarm milk. There's like... gross, slimy, horrible, weird people. And the guy who plays Liam McPoyle plays a kind of white hat cowboy in this. It's really strange. It's really difficult to accept him as being that sort of character.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's just me sort of associating a different role. He is fantastic. He does. The other thing I do like about it is that I'm not going to mention who, but there is a character from another sort of well-known franchise who I don't like as a character in that franchise. Mm-hmm. And in this, and he gets repeatedly killed, which is very, very satisfying. It's just okay, I sat through all this stuff watching you and not like this is just very cathartic. So yeah, no, I would absolutely recommend Westworld to anyone who's on the fence and stuff. I sort of sound I'm really enjoying.
Cool. So yeah, just a real quick one. I watched the first two episodes of The Man in High Castle. Mm-hmm. It's quite an old show now. Amazon show. It's been out for a while, I think, like maybe a year even. I think it is about a year. Mm. It's been out a while, but. Yes, I went round to a friend's house and we watched the first two episodes. And it's based on a Philip K. Dick. And basically the premise is that the end of the Second World War ended differently, and the Nazis now rule half of America and Japan rules the other half and sort of cooperates with the Nazis. Hitler's still clinging on, but I think he's got Parkinson's or something, so he's on his way out, and they're worried about a power vacuum type thing. Mm-hmm. So it's a pretty grim world. It's set in 1962. So I think the year before what would have been the Kennedy assassination. It's not as bright and breezy as America in the 60s was in our timeline. And yeah, so there's this central character is this woman whose sister is obviously part of some resistance or something. She has some contraband film that she gives her. This is very, very beginning, so it's not really a spoiler, it's just the kind of catalyst. So she gives her this film, doesn't really explain what it is, and just says, I don't know, and then runs off into the night. And what ensues leaves the protagonist with this film and on the run kind of thing. And she is the worst spy, even though she's not a professional spy. She's just the worst. She's obviously never even seen a spy movie. And considering she's a product of a totalitarian regime, you know, where there's probably Secret Service, people are probably have like reporting on each other and people getting busted. Her boyfriend has a Jewish grandfather, you know, and they discuss at some point being really worried about that and everything. So she'd know that if any sort of police awareness of her and her movements, she'd be in trouble, but her boyfriend could be dead.
Yeah.
Could be sent straight to a gas chamber. And she's just rubbish. She's got this bag with this film in it. It's like a reel of film, like a cinema canister of film. So it's not some like microfilm. And she puts it in a different case. So kudos for that.
Yeah.
So she swaps the case. It's like it's got Popeye label on it. She's got this bag that's too small for the film. So the film is always like poking out of the top. She never tries to shut it. She doesn't put a jumper over it. And then she wanders around clutching this bag as if it's got some contraband secret film footage in it. Yeah. So wherever she goes, she looks highly suspicious. But then we'll just trust complete strangers. And it's just the most infuriating thing ever. But in spite of that, like the set of the world is really intriguing. The mystery of what's on the film and why the Nazis, you know, because basically what's on the film could bring down the Reich. Yeah. And so it's like, why? You kind of see bits of the images, but you're still not sure why that should bring it down or what it is, or, you know, whether it's fake or what's on the film or what. But yeah, so it's a really intriguing story. But yeah she's just a dumb protagonist.
Do you think the reason she's not very good at being a spy is that in this, well, if it's 1962 and this is an alternate universe, the James Bond films haven't even come out yet in our universe,
or even noir. There was no noir because there were no German immigrants bringing German expressionism to Hollywood. There probably isn't even a Hollywood as we know it.
No. That's the bit I want to see in that series. It's not the main thrust. I want to see, well, what's film like?
What's their cinema
world
like?
Yeah.
Lots of hale and hearty people bringing in the harvest or something.
Yeah.
Doing calinetics or whatever. Calisthenics? What was it called?
Calisthenics,
yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm quite interested to see it because people loved it. You know, it was really like people were like, oh, it's amazing. And I was like, it's a really good setting, but she is, it's good in spite of her. Mm. Not because of her.
Right.
It's kind of better when it's good because the protagonist is good.
Yeah, I think I might give that a go. It's on Amazon Prime, is it?
Yeah.
Ah, excellent. I've already got my subscription.
Okay. So that's my pick of the month, as it were.
Cool.
Right? I think that's us then.
Yeah.
So we'll leave everybody to their turkey.
Yeah.
And now they've got some good and not so good TV that they may or may not decide to watch.
There we are. So that's something to do in the afternoon. You're all full from turkey.
Yeah. So we've got good, better, best.
Yeah.
And people can decide for themselves.
West
the order.
West Wing.
Yeah, I think so. I having not seen it, but yeah, I think West will. Okay.
All
thanks,
right,
Drew. Until next time.
Cheerio. Thank you for listening. If you have enjoyed this episode of Are You the Toss, and why wouldn't you? You can find us on iTunes. Just search for Are You the Toss. You can also find our RSS feed on our main page at gameindustry.com. If you don't use iTunes and you use another podcast player, that should work fine with it.
We're also on SoundCloud. Look for Are You the Toss. Our host, of course, is gameindustry.com. So you can talk to us via the Twitter page there, which is at Gin Lounge. You can also find us on YouTube, and Game Industry News is also on Facebook, on Google Plus, and all those good social media things. So give us a thumbs up, give us a like, tell us what you like. It's awesome. You're awesome for listening. Thank you so much.
Nailed it.